Okay, so I hope you got your surveys all filled out by now. Now let's continue with compiler construction for today. Last time we have started a new chapter talking about bottom-up parsing, with introducing first of all this very general concept of performing bottom-up analysis via the shift-reduced parser, which is like the item pushdown automaton, a very rough sketch of how our plan of parsing can be realized. And what both of them have in common is that both of them make rather drastic use of non-determinism in their construction. So, in order to get an actual effective algorithm out of that, we wanted to get rid of the non-determinism by attacking these situations in our algorithm where we would non-deterministically choose between alternatives, and instead of doing random choices, we would do educated choices. And there were several concepts with which we could enhance this shift-reduce parser step by step to get rid of a lot of non-deterministic choices in there. So the first idea that, well, maybe first to come to a common starting ground is, well, what does this thing do, this shift-reduce parser? It essentially either shifts terminals from the input stream to its own stack. These are this shift transitions, those fellows here, and then the other kind of important transition is the reduced transition that would, as soon as we realize that there is or the top of the stack is corresponding to a right-hand side of a production, we would replace these symbols with whatever the left-hand side of that production is. So these are the two transitions that are competing with each other for actually being executed, and we need to decide whether to either shift or to reduce whenever there is a right-hand side of production on top of the pushdown. We can even have situations where reduced transitions compete with each other for actual reducing if one if a particular top of stack matches several right-hand sides of productions, for example. These are these reduce-reduce conflicts. So, our idea of tackling that was to first, well, observe a little bit how parsing would work, and that there is a certain correspondence between what we find on our pushdown during parsing and the actual decisions whether to reduce or to shift. So there is a correspondence between those. And indeed, the first clue that we can use for figuring out which alternative to take, whether to shift or to reduce or to tell with what to reduce, would be to try to follow the stack content with the idea in mind that the stack content must somehow correspond to a partially derived syntax tree in form of a rightmost derivation, and it must somehow correspond to whatever we can find to be at this borderline between the already reduced tokens and the still to be reduced non-terminals here. And in order to get an idea of how this shape is allowed to look like, we were applying the idea of introducing a helper automaton. So there's a base automaton, which is a push-down automaton called the shift reuse parser. And on top of this thing, we would install a small helper automaton in form of a finite automaton, so this one doesn't have a stack, that would run on the pushdown content of the shift reduce parser. So what it consumes is non-terminals and terminals, and based on what it finds on there, it tries to reconstruct these partially derived syntax trees from whatever it finds on the stack, and it does so by following the structure of the grammar or of the production collection, and yes, there are certain rules that you can use there. So you can either either shift your attention further to the right of your current right-hand side with putting this marker to the right, but also this also only works whenever you really see corresponding symbols already on the pushdown. If you don't see a corresponding symbol on the pushdown, what else you can do is you can unfold the non-terminal which is currently marked, which is by these which is represented in this automaton by these non-deterministic transitions in there, and they expand into whatever the non-terminal has as productions in the grammar. So with an E we can either expand to E plus T or T, thus we connect a marker in front of E with this as well as this state in our automaton. So this gives us an idea of how the partially derived syntax tree can look like, and with the help of the so far partially assembled, partially bottom-up assembled syntax tree represented by this stack, we can navigate to the to our current point where we have to decide whether to reduce or to shift more, and depending on what we find as a state that we can reach in this characteristic automaton, we can then have a look at whether we find that the state that we have reached is a final state, meaning one of those where we have the marker on the right-hand side, or a non-final state, one of those where the marker is not on the right-hand side yet. If the marker is on the right-hand side, we consider that the whole this whole level of subtree that is so far expanded is completely matched with input. So the next advisable thing to do would be to reduce and continue one level further up in the derivation tree. So the green ones are the ones that say reduce, while the non-completed right-hand sides would say, well, we're just in the process of matching, we still need more information, and this can be achieved by shifting another symbol on the stack. So the red ones would vote for shifting. This is already quite a nice thing. However, we have now non-determinism within this little helper automaton also, because there's epsilon transitions in there. However, since this is a finite automaton, we have said, well, this is a nice thing about finite automatons. We can just get rid of non-determinism by making them deterministic via power set construction, and indeed we can do so. And this at first looks like this is helping a lot. So the idea is instead of doing two constructions, one after the other, we reduce the whole effort to just one construction and do this automaton construction on the fly. We've said how this works by exploring the state space of this LR0 automaton step by step, based on the transitions that we can go, and step by step we would uncover the desired automaton. However, upon further inspection, we have seen now that we have come to a deterministic automaton. We had to pay a price for that. Particularly, the price was that we had to join several items into one state, which means that although at first it looked like the advice given by this automaton would be conclusive in the sense that either there is a marker at the end of a production or not, now we have several or potentially several items per state. So if we now happen to have a closed item and a non-closed item in these states, the automaton itself is still deterministic. However, the advice that we can read off from the state that we reach in this automaton isn't conclusive enough for deciding whether to now do a reduction or a shift. So although this already helped a little bit with a few of the conflicts that we were in, this is still not enough for a lot of practical languages. So we were wondering after a few things what to do now, and we came to the conclusion that apart from just deciding upon the push down, there are still other things to take into consideration. Particularly, we were now focusing on the role that the leftover input plays on deciding which action would be desirable. So this is kind of the state that we were in last time. Quite a long introduction, but I found it important to come to this kind of chain of arguments again. So our idea was now, instead of saying that items are just evaluated without any context of what else is found in the remaining input, we should probably make use of this remaining input to maybe realize whether it's a place for reduction or for shifting. So how this can be done is we extend the items that we had so far, which were just plain productions with markers in there, and using these items to track during this run through the productions and its expansions, or progress more to the right hand side, and to track what is what the valid context is in terms of what can follow for that particular state in the input. So we would append another element to this item, which would be, in theory would be just one symbol for the LR1 item. Later on we will extend that a little bit more if we put more or if we pay attention to more input symbols. We could have strings up to a certain length in there, and this we would call LR1 items instead of LR0 items that we had before. So with these now we can go for the for a similar construction as we had for the LR0 characteristic automaton, an automaton that tries to find admissible LR1 items for a particular content of the pushdown of a shift reduce automaton, meaning that we would call an LR1 item admissible for such a pushdown content if, following holds, if we can find a rightmost derivation starting from the start symbol that produces a prefix of the pushdown content that we call alpha, and if the rest of the pushdown is then the first component of the right-hand side of the item in question, directly in front of the marker, and this right derivation starting from the start symbol S is also reaching the left-hand side symbol of this LR1 item. Then if X is actually the first symbol of what follows in this derivation, then this item would be admissible for this situation. So this is what admissible would mean for LR1 items. Now, how can we come up with a automaton that computes us these things? This would be the characteristic LR1 automaton, which is pretty similar to what the characteristic LR0 automaton is, with just one extension, and this being the the right context of the automaton. You see me stopping a little bit, just a moment. I have to check whether this is the current version of the slides. Okay. I missed to exchange a few things in there, so this is a mistake. This was meant to be end of file. So, the automaton would start with the start state similar to the LR0 characteristic automaton, and this the starting state then is this S prime goes to S. But now the question is, what do we fill in as an appropriate right context for our start thing? And well, for our input, the only thing that can come to the right of the complete program would be, well, file end symbol. And this is why there is this dollar symbol here. What are final states in the characteristic automaton? These would be, again, states where we have a closed item, meaning the marker is at the right of a right-hand side. And, that is that. Then transitions in there would work, well, partially similar to the characteristic LR0 automaton. The shifts, for example, are exactly the same. So there's a shift transition. Well, I call it shift transition, but it's unnamed here. So this first transition is this one where we just shift the bullet one to the right, like this, ending up here, while consuming a symbol X, which is preceded by the marker at the beginning of the transition. So this is kind of the same that the LR0 characteristic automaton does. While we do this transition, our focus of attention is directly on this spot, which has nothing to do with the actual context in which this thing was happening, so the context remains the same. So the symbol, this look-ahead symbol here, is not changing in any way. That changes when we look at the second type of transition that happens here. So here we try to simulate what states we can reach when we expand a certain non-terminal. This always happens when the marker is in front of a non-terminal symbol. Then what we usually do is we do an epsilon transition to the expanded version of that non-terminal coming from the grammar. So this is this B goes to whatever is its right-hand side with a marker in front of that. But the question is now, what would the context look like? Remember, the context would have to represent whatever comes to the right of the currently expanded subtree. So this would be everything that has something to do with this beta and maybe even this X part of the item. So this would have to be analyzed for whatever symbol can appear at first for whatever is yielded by this thing. So this is a thing that we have already met in the LL parsers. So this is all about computing first sets of sequences of symbols. And this is also what we do here in order to obtain a new look-ahead symbol for this for this LR1 item, which we have to connect to. So what we do is we compute the first one set of beta, which we obtain directly from the whatever symbols we find to the right of this unfolded B, and one concatenate that to the original right context in which this item lived. This would only play a role whenever this beta could produce an epsilon. Then we would have to look at the actual right context of the complete item. And we would repeat to do so for as long as we can expand non-terminals within this construction. So all the symbols that we can reach via that, we would add such a transition to. So this would lead to an automaton, which we then can make deterministic, or we can directly do a construction of such an automaton, same as we have done for the canonical LR0 automaton. So for that we need to define an epsilon closure as a helper for constructing the states, and then do the transitions as we have done that before. So this closure would essentially do the part for these transitions over here, since those are the ones that actually contribute to epsilon transitions in the original automaton. So what they usually do is they expand non-terminals that are marked in so far discovered items of this state, and while expanding those non-terminals, they would construct the according right contexts of what has been expanded at that step, and gathers that in the look-ahead symbol part. So, how that works, we have seen on the slide before. Then, for the direct construction, what we would do is we would start again with this start state as prime goes to S, with just the end of file as its right context so far. We would immediately include all these epsilon transitions to the expandable productions and generate a complete set of LR1 items with that, and then happily start transitioning whenever that is possible by going through all the possible all the possible symbols that there are from the states that we have uncovered, and generate new LR1 item sets that we then immediately close, in the sense that we just do again this following these epsilon transitions, and do so until the whole system stabilizes, and in the end put final state markers to everything that has a closed item in it. So you might wonder what a construction augmented this way would yield, and well, to demonstrate you that, I have put the... This is not what comes out of that, this is just what has been constructed last time when we did the canonical LR0 construction. But I left space for the look-ahead symbols to be filled in. And also, what you should pay attention to is during this this construction, we will see that that transitions that had been valid in the past will be invalidated and replaced with new ones, so that in the end, the automaton that comes out of that won't have the same shape as the LR0 automaton had. What you should take away from that is that it is dangerous later on, if you happen to be in some kind of an exam situation, for example, to first construct the LR0 automaton and then say, well, for an LR1 automaton, I just have to put in the look-ahead symbols. This won't work. These automata have different shapes, and you will run into errors if you reuse the same shapes. So please don't. You'll see why during this uncovering thing. So, the should be hopefully identifiable here. The starting point of all that was this one item here. This S prime goes to E with the end of file as its write context. This was the thing that spawned everything in our world. So this is what we have here in Q0, and the idea is now to step by step do these closure steps until we can't expand anything anymore and don't have any changes in the look-ahead symbols. And when we have done that, we will go over to the other states and copy over the look-ahead sets as far as that is possible, and so on. So how do we proceed from this thing then? In order to perform the closure, what we will have to do is we will have to expand this E thing, which is marked here. So this will usually lead to adding items in there. This is nothing new. This has happened before in the LR0 construction also. However, in this closure thingy, what we have to do is we have to take care of that we track the correct write context of that thing, in the sense that what we have to keep track of what can follow up the freshly expanded non-terminal. Okay, so where do we take what can follow up for this non-terminal? Well, we look directly to the right of the newly expanded non-terminal. Here we have the case that there's no sequence of symbols following in the right-hand side, because E had been the last symbol of the right-hand side here. So there is no beta that we have to compute the first symbol of. Instead, we can look directly to what has been mentioned as right context in the original thing. And this was this epsilon symbol. Okay, so this is what is supposed to follow the everything that is expanded from E. Okay, so this is what we then fill into the right contexts for both of the expanded things. So far, clear. Okay, so with that we have worked on this first expansion, and we would continue on just mechanically just go through everything that we have newly added and check for possible expansions. So there would be, for example, this second line here where the marker is in front of an E. This would lead to adding productions for E. However, we have already added them in the step before. This was what we did in the LR0. Again, in LR0, we said at that point we can stop. Here we have a difference now. We can't really stop because now we have another spot where E had been expanded, which could potentially have another right context, one that differs from before. And that is exactly the case here. Here we have the plus terminal, which now is another possibility for a right-hand side, for a right context of what has been expanded. So this thing now also has to go into the list of possible right contexts. So instead of keeping all of these items separated, I join them in one line and put a set to write. Otherwise, these states just tend to be so long that you can't really see anything meaningful out of them anymore. So I group them into one-liners and just put sets there. So since there the plus is now also right context of an unfolded E, this also has to go into every item for E. Okay. So that's that. Then the next thing that we have to consider is that we have added this third line. There's also a marker. This is a marker for T. So what we will do is we will add T to this state. So what has to go into the look ahead for these two items? Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is right. So there's two steps hidden in there. There's, for once, there's this the expansion has been done at first for line 3. Well, there is no other symbols following the flagged non-terminal, so we can directly take everything that we had as right context before, which is this file end and plus, and they go into both of these look-ahead sets. So this is kind of step one done. Then you already rightfully said that there is also line 5, it is, which is having another expanded symbol preceding now another right context. This time this multiplication thing. So this one also goes to both of these things. So you see these look-ahead sets are repeatedly updated. So when you are in process of constructing such a thing, maybe don't put the closing brackets there right from the beginning, but wait until the whole thing has stabilized, because you can have several loops running through all these things depending on how these expansions develop throughout this thing. So only when you're sure that the whole system has stabilized and there's no dependencies on already expanded things, then in the end put the closing things in there. So, yeah, this is what happens. Also, there was the mark in front of an F, so we also add F there, and yeah, I've put it into this particular into this particular order to demonstrate you a little thing, particularly if you would have looked at this expanded thing, you would have copied this file end and plus and the file and plus in here, and then in the next step you would have looked at this one. Looked at this one, and retrospectively would have added the times operator here, the multiplication operation over here, and well, with that you have implicitly updated a set on which another item has been depending on. So if you do these changes of look-ahead sets, as soon as you do them, please reconsider every other dependency. Like you, if you fill in these times, these multiplication symbols in there, you have to also propagate them to the look-ahead sets of this F thing. So as soon as you add these, please evaluate both of them. Check whether there is a change in look-aheads for any of them. These lists can only ever grow, so you never have to cross things out, but they may grow. And please take care of that. So this is why I have rearranged them a little bit. You might have noticed that when you have thought about that. So, yeah, what you have to do is you have to also transport this times thing here. So, yeah, this is what comes out of that. Yeah? I think this never happens in this example, so yeah, but usually you would have to. So you have to do the full-fledged first computation from the chapter before. It's just easier for that example to not have to do that, and also it's a meaningful grammar, so I didn't put anything in there, but it's a valid point. You have to do these computations beforehand and use the results for this propagation thing. So this was already quite the thing to do for just the first state. So with that we have finalized this Q0 thing, and still we have to continue exploring the rest of the states of the automaton. So this is quite an extensive thing to do, and this is worth a lot of points in an exam question if you do that. Also, it's quite mechanical, so it's easy points if you know what you're doing. Just yeah. Then what you then do usually is you continue your state creation by then going through all these items, checking for the markers, and for every marker you add a transition with its with the symbol that it marks to the thing. So we have a transition with E for these two fellows, we have a transition with T for those two, this is this one, we have a transition with F for this one, a transition with the terminal for this one, and a transition with opening bracket for this one. So this spawns a whole lot of other states. And same as for the LR0 automaton construction, you take the items that had been marked for that particular symbol over to the next thing. This is what I have baptized a shift transition earlier on, so this transition type number one earlier on, and this leads to, for example, in our case, those two things under the E transition will be transported over here, and the marker goes one step to the right. And what's what about the look aheads? Do you remember? Well, just shifting our focus to the right and not expanding anything doesn't change anything on the current right context of what we are focusing on. So what we usually do is we just copy over these things. So this is going to be appearing in maybe the next slide. I don't know which one I have unfolded, so I want to just show another thing here, particularly this one. So this transition here comes from this item, where the marker is in front of the opening bracket, and this at first only contributes to one item being there. But then, of course, apart from just copying over, you then have to go to through the same game. It's still the epsilon closure that you have to apply to that. So we restart our computation from Q0 on this Q5 again, just with instead of S prime goes to E, with this F goes to bracket marker E, closing bracket, and the right context from there. And this will spawn a whole lot of other items again, together with look-ahead symbols. So, because I don't know whether... okay, I have just copied over and not performed this thing. Okay, so I'm good. So, here, everything that happened was just copying over. There, the marker is never in front of a non-terminal, so we don't have to expand anything here. So this is nice for our purposes. We are already done with this one and can just follow whatever can be transitioned to from here, which would just be this plus thing going to contribute this starting item here. Also, we have done a similar thing for this opening bracket, which has created such a thing. Here also, this thing has been created, and this thing has been created. Yeah, see, here I've also, I've pretty much done a lot of things that came kind of cheap already in this step. Just a lot of copying around of look-ahead symbols and just putting the marker a little bit to the right. So now there's... what we now have to do is basically fill in all the look-aheads with the same principle as before. So we analyze whatever we can expand here. This would be both E's, and the E's would carry over this look-ahead since there's no symbol in between. Also, we might add a plus, but this is already in there, so this doesn't give us a lot of more a lot more information. And, well, similar... to that, we would also continue in this one and in this one to fill in all the look-aheads. And yeah, this leads to this one, slowly filling up our diagram. And what you see here is I have highlighted a few of the transitions, the one from Q4 5 to itself, for example, because this was supposed to, in the LR0 automaton, to be just a loop reaching the same state under the transition of opening bracket. Yeah, well, here now, with the look-ahead symbols, we see that we would have to transition, if we go with an opening bracket, so much is still the same, but what we carry with us now is this look ahead closing bracket plus and multiplication. However, the item with which we have started the whole thing, which looks completely the same when we look at the LR0 core thing. So this would, the LR0 part of the item would still be appropriate. However, the look ahead part would not be. So it is not legal to connect the state with itself on the transition of opening bracket anymore in LR1. And there's a few other transitions that are not valid anymore. And depending on whatever grammar you do that for, whatever collection of productions you do that for, this might also not be legal anymore for the other constructions. And indeed, the whole purpose of doing this LR1 automaton is to get an automaton that is able to express more than the former LR0 construction in terms of helping us to decide these reduce and shift conflicts. And this is where the additional expressivity of LR1 comes from. We get a more detailed automaton with more states, all in all, that give us room for disambiguation between certain items. And yeah, so what instead happens is we have to introduce new states. This is the one that we have been focusing on. So with opening bracket, we will reach this Q5 prime now, which has this new look ahead sets compared to what has been there before, and is serving for other situations as the state Q5 from before, thus carries with it the potential for disambiguating between certain parsing states. And yeah, this will potentially continue, but the interesting parts are the ones that you have already witnessed. So there's this part of doing the epsilon closure on the on the only partially present states to fill up the whole state with everything that can be expanded and its appropriate contexts. And what you've also seen is that the automaton that is created by that is actually a different automaton than the automaton that came from the LR0 construction. It carries more information with it. And to illustrate you that, this is kind of what is created. So it's almost twice the states that you get out of this construction by just carrying a look ahead of one with you. And I can tell you, or you can even maybe already somehow see that depending on the length of the look ahead that you treat there, you have a lot of more combinations for look ahead information that you have to incorporate into these automata. So if you put more look ahead into that, you will get an even larger automaton out of that, and it turns out, well, since the combinations that you can construct with these sequences of tokens are, well, just exponential, with the base being the number of terminals that you have, yeah, well, this whole construction will grow rather exponentially in the length of the look ahead that you're considering. But still, for smaller look aheads, this is still a feasible thing to do. So now, with this kind of complicated construction, did that really help? Did we or could we get rid of the conflicts that we had before? So well, turns out yes, we were successful. And as an example, just have a look at this Q9 state, which if you would just cover the this part over here, in the sense that this would be the LR0 part of the state, there you would still have a conflict. This is a closed item together with a non-closed item, so this would be a shift-reduced conflict in that thing. So now we have another part which is giving us context, but did that help? Figure out what to do in a particular parsing situation? Is that now a non-conflicting state? For that, what we would usually do is we would look into if we end up scanning the stack of our shift-reduce automaton, when we reach the end of the stack, we would, for example, end up in this Q9. This is a final automaton, so this is exactly stopping at this thing. So now, does that help us in our decision whether to do reduction or not? What would you say? Well, it's already answered this. It helps us, but the question is why? And a lot of people run into, or the first intention is probably to just look at the look-aheads and say, well, if they are different, then we can decide which of those things applies. Turns out, well, in our case, we see they are not so much different. They're actually overlapping a little bit, or even quite quite a lot. That's not what you do. Instead, what you need to do is you need to check or compare the input to whatever comes after the thing that you currently focus, which would be not in every case only the look ahead, but the look ahead together with everything that follows the marker. So this is what you have to take into account. So what you have to compare is this end of file and plus with whatever is the first symbol of multiplication, F, followed by potentially end of file plus or multiplication, which is this one intersected with whatever first of that gives us. And this is an easy case because we don't have any non-terminals follow each other, so we can just directly read off what is here, which is the multiplication thing. So all boils down into whether those two intersect or not. And indeed, both of these cases apply to different situations. If our input symbol, or the next input symbol that we that we're gonna see is a multiplication operator, then we will opt for this alternative, which would say this is not a reduction, this is a shift. If our next input symbol is either end of the file or plus symbol, we would opt for this one, which would say, well, this is a completed item, so here we have to reduce. So this is how you have to read these things. Don't let be fooled into believing that just the look-ahead symbol set is the one that you have to check. You have to check the whole thing that follows the marker. Okay? Good. So with that now, we can augment our LR0 parser into the LR1 parser by kind of going through these going through the LR1 automaton and coding its transition function into the go-to table. Well, finite automata can be represented with a table. You have learned so much in the tutorial so far, I guess. And the action table will be a table where you can look up states. So you fill that by just going through all the states that there are, and they represent the lines in this table, and the columns in these will be the look-ahead symbols, which you gather from which you gather from whatever follows these bullets. So for each of these items in there, you do these computations here and gather whatever symbols are corresponding to which items. And with this, you can give fill in this action table depending on current state, current lookahead symbol. Please reduce with this one, or please shift without any further information. And this will lead to the explicit construction of the LR1 parser. So this basically, it still does quite similar things as the old shift reduce parser. So there is shift transitions, where you consume input and put something on the pushdown. We had this optimization of instead work of not working on the symbols purely, but instead working on the actual states of the underlying helper automaton. So this is what we do here also. So usually what we do is, first of all, we examine the current top of the stack, which is this the last state of the LR1 automaton that we had seen, and we check with look-ahead symbol W what our automaton tells us to do. If the automaton tells us this is a shift thing, what we will do is we will then do a shift transition, which is just following our transitions in the underlying LR1 automaton with the as input the terminal symbol that we have consumed. So this one goes into the LR1 automaton, and the state that we get out of that is then added or pushed onto the stack. Yeah, and this is just what the shift does. The reduce, similar to what the shift reduce parser does, of course, takes away a lot of content from the stack and replaces it with just one new thing on there. So what we will do is, again, we will inspect the top of the stack. We will look into this thing. We will, in case that this is a final state, then we will consider the action table for this state, together with the first symbol from the remaining input, and this will usually then tell us what the appropriate reduce action will be. This is what we use for seeing how many items the right hand how many symbols the right hand side of the to be reduced item has. This gives us information of how many such things we have to take from the push down and replace with something new, and what we replace them with will be given to us by the left-hand side of this item, because that is what we put into the transition of the underlying LR1 automaton based on the state that we had before all these states that meddled with the right-hand side of this A goes to beta. And this will give us the following state Q that we will then push on there. So this is doing quite a lot of different tasks all in one step. This is probably, by just looking on this specification, quite hard to really understand. I would advise you to actually really do an example construction. Just really mechanically following these principles. And I think there is a tutorial assignment that is actually doing that. So this should help you in understanding that quite a lot. And yeah, it's actually not so complicated. It's just that there's two automata running on top of each other, and you have to know which one does which step in order for the whole thing to really make sense to you. So yeah, that's that. The only thing that is then still out there is the final condition for when we accept everything, and this is the usual one. So yeah, that is that. So with that, we have an LR1 parser in our example. You might wonder how the action table looks like, and even this kind of small example already gives us a quite large action table, since the underlying automaton was already that large. So the action table should contain for each of the final states in there a line, and this is what you see here. And the columns are the possible symbols that can be found in the look-ahead sets, because for each of these final states you inspect the all the items and gather all the look-ahead symbols that you find there for entering them in the columns of this table. And then, well, you reconstruct the advice that you want to give for each of these states by these first one concatenated with the look-ahead symbols, and whatever comes out of that you then enter in there. And this is the action table that you then consider for whether to do a shift or a reduce action. Okay, so much so good. Now, in practical use, when you work with these systems, LR1 is not the philosopher's stone in that sense. So this will not solve all the problems that you will ever gonna have with parsing, since there can be still grammars that are not LR1, or if you try to put them into LR1 construction, you will see that they are producing reduce conflicts still. You might wonder, or you might want to get a feeling of what you can actually achieve with this. Well, with LR1 parsing is good enough, for example, to do ANSI-C if you ignore for a minute what these type def mess creates as obstacles for you, but everything else is just LR1. You can do Java from version 1 to 1.4 or even 5. I don't know when they added the feature that broke with a look ahead of 1. The later versions of the Java grammar are LR2 as far as I remember, having to do with what we will see a little bit later on. But at least with a look ahead of 2, you should be probably quite well equipped for doing that. And there's a lot of grammars that you can just put into a plain LR1 automaton and be done with that. So this is, in a certain sense, the what you usually do in LR parsing. A look ahead of 1 is usually already quite mighty. So you can pump it up to even further look ahead by switching from a look ahead of 1 to a look ahead of whatever constant you like. With that, you have to change of course, the first computation. We had a special purpose computation that served as well for look aheads of size maximally 1. If you pump up this k, you will have to get rid of this special purpose computation and do the general algorithm for first computation, which involves the fixed point iteration and stabilizing the first sets of each of these symbols there. And there's a little bit more of an effort, but it's still a thing that you can code within a few hours, I would say. However, of course, with growing k, you will get look-ahead sequences that also grow in their length, and from that you get a certain explosion of look-aheads that you have to deal with. So this will probably not be instantiated with 1,000, rather something like 1, 2, or 3. But still, it is computable in that sense. The question is whether it's feasible to do. Anyway, for practical work, you might at some point be tempted to write your own parser at some point, and you might remember, there was this nice little lecture with this very sympathetic lecturer that told you about LR parsing, and then you use that, and bam, you see you have used an LR1 parser, but still get shift reduce or reduce reduce conflicts. What a bummer. Yeah, it's not all gold that shines, but shift reduce and reduce reduce conflicts happen in practice. And what do you do as a practical programmer in these situations? And I don't want to leave you hanging there. I want to still give you some advice of what you can do in these situations. So there's this concept of precedences. This has to do with exactly the situation. You have coded your grammar, you have given that to an LR1 or LRK, whatever, parser, and the outcome of the generation says you, well, there's a shift-reduce or a reduce-reduce conflict in there. And usually a few of those, if you track them, you can let the system give you examples for whatever input triggers a shift-reduce conflict or a reduce-reduce conflict. With this, you usually can check, oh, well, I have maybe, for example, implemented an ambiguous grammar. Usually, if you realize that, you will see that whatever you do, you won't ever find a finite amount of look-ahead that will help you in an ambiguous grammar. So we will usually try to get rid of a lot of these conflicts by just removing the ambiguities from your grammar. Other conflicts that you find in there that are not due to ambiguous grammars are a little bit worse, because you might wonder, well, I want to actually parse a thing like that. How can I make the system do that? And an example would be this one. This is even an ambiguous grammar, so even worse. So the system will tell you, if you put it into an LR1 parser, that this specification of the arithmetic expressions gives a shift-reduce conflict, for example, in state 8. And the example that is given to you is this here, that says that you detect, for example, in the input, or you are in a parsing state where your stack has E plus E, which would be a complete right-hand side for reduction here. And the first input symbol would be a plus. So you could now either argue that you are within this state here, where you still want to shift with plus in order to complete this sum right-hand side, or you could say that, well, I'm in the in this state here where I want to first of all collapse my addition here and then continue with another addition. And it turns out for this particular example, it's actually, well, it doesn't matter whether you sum up first or, well, depending on your application, you usually don't really care which variant you later on compute, because they are similar anyway, but you have to tell the computer what to do in that situation, because it's actually really ambiguous. So in this case, you can just resolve the ambiguity by giving the operator plus here a particular associativity, meaning that you would make it, for example, left associative by patching the spot in the action table, which was, well, not filled in automatically, with please reduce in the situation. So this is what would happen if you define this operator as left associative. There's another shift reduce conflict due to a similar situation with multiplication. So this is almost exactly the same thing here also. You probably, if you're not into hardcore numerics, you don't care what to do first. So you might decide arbitrarily here, just for funsies, I've make this right associative by putting shift in there. So yeah, that's that. Then there's other situations that pop up in shift reduce conflicts. These here, where you the parser considers itself either in the state of wanting to complete multiplication expression, or, well, having already found an addition on the top of the stack, or the other way around, being in the process of completing an addition while having already found a multiplication on top of the stack. Well, depending on the input that is still there, you can run into a conflict here, shift-reduce conflict in each of these cases. The question is, what do you want to do in these cases? And here our application says this is pretty bad if you have already found an multiplication on the stack, and then continue as if you would want to complete an addition. This violates the rules that we are used to apply for multiplication and addition. And here you would want to patch the action table in a way that always the multiplication gets precedence over the addition, and you can specify these kind of preferences between those two operators in practical LR systems, giving multiplication the higher precedence than the addition, which would then fill in the remaining open slots in the action table with the according actions to be used. So, precedences are one thing that you can apply for getting rid of shift-reduce conflicts. However, this might also not be always applicable, because you might not always find that this has to do with certain operators or something like that. So the question is, what do you do if precedences are not enough? But considering how far we already are in terms of time, I would say let's keep that a surprise for now and focus on that next time. So, next time is a bank holiday, is it? Or is it just in 2 weeks? I don't actually remember. 2 weeks. Okay, so then I'll see you all next week, and have a nice day.